Hi everyone, it's Catherine. Just popping on to let you know that we are doing something a little bit different the next couple of weeks in the lead up to my book, The Competition, coming out in Feb 2022. So we're going to start with a three-part deep dive, no spoilers, but some behind-the-scenes content. And then after that, we're going to do some interviews with social media and publicity experts on what to do when your book comes out. So a little bit like what we did in the early days of the podcast for those that have been listening that long. So stay tuned and hopefully stay well.
So, Catherine, we're obviously primarily a podcast for writers, and everyone knows that we kind of particularly I obsess over the writing process. And even though I know bits and pieces of the writing process of the competition, I don't have it all in one kind of narrative in my head, and neither of course do our audience. So today we're just going to go deep on the writing process. When did you start writing the competition?
I started writing it before The Helpline was published. So The Helpline came out September 2018. I probably started it 12 months before. But I had been sitting on it, the concept.
And did you start writing it in that period when kind of The Helpline was in edits, going with that advice that one should immediately start writing the next book?
I think it was before that. Like, I think I had a draft that I was at the point of, I don't know that I can do anything more. This was for The Helpline. I don't know that I can do any more of this. And I was in processes of waiting to hear back from people. I was waiting to do the hard copy program with the ACT. Uh-huh. So I started it around that time. So The Helpline hadn't been bought when I started it.
So thinking about what the book looks like now, because this kind of idea really interests me, is the thing that you wrote first in any way in the book as it stands now, the first scene or the first piece of dialogue or the first kind of character thing, is it in there?
I think the main struggle with a lot of the struggle with this book was structural and working out points of view and stuff. Certainly the points of view are the same as the initial draft. And I always knew the end, that is the same. But pretty much everything else has changed.
Okay, we'll get on to that. It's well documented in our podcast, particularly, that you wrote The Helpline kind of in these early morning Macca's slots of time that you did in lieu of exercising for a number of years. Did you get the words for the competition down in the same kind of way, or was your writing process different?
Same way. So just works for me. So early get up. Nowadays I'd probably get up at 5, but I try to sleep till 5:30. My best would be I'd write from 6 till 10 and then the day would be done. I'm only good for 4 hours. If I'm doing new words, I'm really not even good for 2 hours. But basically exactly the same routine, and really 7 days a week, unless we're doing something in those early hours. That I would always do that.
And do you still leave the house to do it?
No. This is one of the minor benefits of COVID, is that we have a 3-bedroom house. And in the past, we sort of had one bedroom that was like the kids' share. So we sort of had this bedroom that was kind of a storeroom, junk room, lots of different stuff in it. But once COVID sent everyone home to work from home, that was set up as a bit of an office, and I've managed to keep it as a writing space, and it's got a proper monitor and all those things now, which makes it so much easier. And in fact, I don't think I could write in cafes anymore.
Amazing. Yeah, that's probably true. Did you use a spreadsheet this time or some other kinds of diagrams or organizing tools? Did you use Scrivener? How did you arrange the thing?
Scrivener and spreadsheets. I reckon I'm pretty consistent. So spreadsheets and Scrivener, I feel like I'm really consistent. Basically, the real challenge for this book was that originally it was set when one of the main characters, Frances, who is a young woman, former debater, someone who's sort of was a straight A student and has had a fall from grace, starts at Speechmakers, this public speaking club. That was the original beginning, and then it followed her journey to compete in public speaking competitions. And it ended up at the National Public Speaking kind of championship grand final. And so I probably had that kind of a structure for 2 years, and I refined that with spreadsheets. And I think I had sent Mandy that once or twice. And then when I went on a trip to the Toastmasters International Public Speaking Competition in the States, that was when, that was a big turning point in that I decided that I would set it across 3 days at this national championship. And so that was a whole lot of reworking, because some of that stuff from when Frances had joined could go into those 3 days, but it would have to exist in flashbacks, and some of it would just need to be lost. So it was, the structure always felt really complicated. And so I had lots of spreadsheets with different, you know, looking at different characters and different time periods.
At what point, because I recall this very clearly, you and I were in the car heading to a function for our beloved writers group, and you told me that you had chucked out your draft, like deleted the thing, not moved it to a kind of a rubbish or trash file, but actually like made it disappear. Is this true? When was that? And have you ever regretted that moment?
Yeah, that is true. That was a very dramatic moment.
It was dramatic.
It was really dramatic. Like I just was, I think I had done a draft initially. So when the helpline was purchased by Text, they asked me about whether I had another book that I'd been working on. And I told them about the competition. And Michael Haywood was like, well, maybe we should release that one first. And I was like, yeah, I pretty much got a draft. It was the first draft, the first vomit. People would call it draft zero. Like it was the worst draft ever. And so I was like, yeah, it's practically done. And he was like, well, send it to us. So I don't even think I read the whole thing through. Like I just kind of wrote the end on the end of it, put page numbers on. Like, I don't know what I was thinking. Anyway, so I sent it to Text and they pretty quickly were like, thanks, but I feel like the helpline's a bit more refined at this point. That would be my advice to other people, you know, at least get someone else to read it before you send it. And
but you're in the glow. You're in the glow moment.
Know. Exactly. And I was like, I'm like, help. That's amazing. Like, this is like, I'm on the path.
Yeah.
Anyway. So I felt like I always had a lot of faith in the concept. And Mandy had given me some feedback on that first draft, which was helpful. But I mean, by the time I picked it up the second time, 6 months later, it was glaringly obvious, you know, the kinds of things that needed to change. So I pushed forward with that probably for another, I don't know, 6 months, 9 months, something like that. And that was the version that I very dramatically deleted and got rid of, which felt very cleansing at the time. But I don't regret in the sense that not a lot of that book did make it into the final version. But I think there were probably a few more scenes I perhaps could have salvaged. I think it's really easy to be attracted, or I certainly see for myself, it's easy when something isn't working to just say, oh, I'll just start it again, you know, as though rather than going through that refinement process, which is difficult, to just hope that, I think of Robert Lukens, who talked about how he had written hundreds of, that's probably overstating it, but many drafts of different novels, many different novels had written a first draft for. It was probably sometimes feels like that similar kind of process, although it's the same book. I was hoping at some point it would just come out perfectly formed rather than have to do that. Yeah.
It's weird, huh? That we wish that. I've been looking today at Jerry Saltz's book, How to Be an Artist, which I think that you have, yeah? Catherine.
I don't. Charlotte I've interviewed. I him. Remember listening to Charlotte's interview, and I remember he used her name a lot. And he was quite an intense person. A lot of people love that book.
Yeah, he really is intense. And today I just happened on, because I'm doing it. You know, rather dramatic things to my current manuscript. And number 20 of his lessons is that art is a flatworm. And he talks about this idea of art possessing the ability of regeneration, so that you can split it at any point and then the, you know, the parts will each grow a thing. And I think that that's a really useful idea to think about that original work, you know, that the it's all part of the process. It's all necessary. You know, those first words, maybe the deletion wasn't necessary, but that first draft of it, you know, is there to kind of be scaffolding for the next one, I suppose.
I think as well, if you are, I probably am an underwriter, that feels very true in the sense that if something is not long enough or it needs more depth, it's having to go back and find a moment that is half of something and blowing it out.
Yeah, that's really true. That's
which feels similar,
isn't it?
In some
that
ways.
We're both underwriters rather than overwriters.
Yeah.
I always feel like that. Like when people say, oh, I've got 150,000 words, I've got to cut it down. I'm like, what? How did you even? It's like someone who's run an ultra marathon or something. I'm like, how did you get 150,000 words?
I find it incredible. I remember at Hard Copy, there was a guy who had, like, his book was 300,000 words. Like, it just was far incredible. Out. I don't know how. Yeah.
You know, something that I've thought about quite a bit that has changed a lot for me since writing my first book is that book was written, you know, during our course at RMIT, and that by the nature of that, I shared so much of it. I had ongoing feedback. It was a constant kind of putting out and getting back different ideas about it, changing and adjusting the thing, and then that period of kind of submission as well. And these days, I don't really show my writing to anyone at all until it's much further along. Have you changed how and who you show your work to?
I completely agree. We had the structure of RMIT. We also had our writers group, and we used to workshop a lot with writers group, but now I feel very much the same way. I do it myself for a very long time and would take it very far before I shared it. And I probably would only share it with, like, the competition I shared with Carney at points.
Yep.
But I'm just thinking of this third book that I'm working on. I have shared with one person, but that was like a paid manuscript assessment, not the full manuscript, but a partial manuscript. That's probably more the process that I would take. I would get advice from someone who works in editing or publishing, as opposed to, yeah, that's the way I would do it.
It's interesting, isn't it? And I think it's a little bit like, I think it was your interview with Gary Disher, and I know that this is a little bit different, but he talked about how you kind of just need one good year of a course. And I think that there's almost this point where you need one good year of workshopping, of giving and receiving feedback, and then those voices are kind of in your head in a big context. I'm talking about workshopping when you're workshopping with kind of 5 or 6 or 7 or, you know, 20 people like you do in a course. And then maybe it is time to bring it inward. I don't know. I'm kind of saying this aloud as I'm going, that sounds really kind of shit and wanky. But I think that there is an element that you have to start trusting your instinct, your own instincts a little more than those of others.
Yeah, I think that's really true. I know when I was doing workshopping at RMIT, particularly in those early stages, you are so receptive to any feedback that anyone gives you that you lose the essence of the thing. But I think over time, and once you've done that a bit and sort of had those responses to people's feedback that's both, oh, that was really helpful, and I didn't really like that feedback, or that doesn't really resonate with me, you get much better at having an internal barometer for those things.
Yeah, I like that, internal barometer. That's nice. I
was going to say the things then I think that I seek so much more, like in those early days of writing, it was about learning to write and getting feedback on writing. Now it's the particular neuroses of being a writer, I think, that I so much more seek out in conversation from people.
Yeah, that's really interesting. On editing, you worked with the same editor this time around, the amazing Mandy Brett. How was the process different or the same? Because people often talk about that first experience, their first time around with an editor can be very daunting. How did you approach it for the competition?
Good question. I know everyone says their editor's the best, but Mandy really is the best. I really do think that. When I think of what I first sent her versus the end product, there is no way I could get anywhere near that on my own. I think the thing about Mandy as an editor is it's very discussion-based. Mm-hmm. I've heard of other writers getting pages and pages of feedback, like 9 pages, 10, 11, 12 pages of feedback on things that need to be changed. You would never get that from Mandy. You would get like a phone call and a maybe you would get a follow-up email with a couple of dot points, but probably not. Mm-hmm. It's much more, you know, this is not really working for me. What could you do about it? That sort of an approach, which I think is very difficult, but the amount of growth that you get through it, because you can start to see much better the Mandy's going to ask what's going on with, you know, like it becomes a bit.
Well, it's an invitation, isn't it? It's expansive rather than kind of limiting.
Yeah, that's right. And it also, like I've heard people say that people can tell you what's wrong with your work, but they can never really tell you how to fix it. And this is much more in line with that, identifying what's not working. And then, you know, sometimes she'll say, and she's made some great suggestions, like I think of one in particular where she told me there was a character that featured very heavily in this one person's past. And Mandy was like, they really need to be at the conference, like, which seems, you know, retrospectively is one of those things that you're like, oh, obviously. But yeah, I think the best growth that I've had through working with her have been through those discussions and that thinking time after.
I think that's fantastic. I don't know if you had the same experience, but the first time around, you're so, I really felt very nervous about having ideas suggested to me. Like I couldn't really work out then, is the work mine or does that mean it's somewhere else? But I think what happens as you go through and you write more and you have more experiences with editors is that absolutely you go, oh my gosh, yes, suggest something to me, like, and then let me see what my brain will do with it, where I can take it. And that things like you've just said, Mandy mentioning to you, you know, we'll put that character there or make that thing not happen until 8 months later. You think, oh my gosh, yeah, amazing. It's one tiny suggestion, but the possibilities from that are endless, aren't they?
Well, and often those things seem glaringly old. Like it just is like something clicks into place and has this whole cascade for you in your head of like, oh, then that can happen there. And it's a gift.
It was like it was meant to happen. Tell me, is there anything that's changed in terms of your process or that you've learned this time around that you'll be consciously taking into the writing of book 3 and beyond?
For book 3, I have tried doing the 90-day novel. I think we've talked about this before, but basically getting a real sense of characters and plot before commencing the first, either draft 0 or first draft. I think that because I spent so long fluffing around in those early phases, though it wasn't fluffing around, it was probably character development and working out the plot as well. I think that having more structure in those early phases is actually really going to help. I think. We'll see.
I cannot wait to see.
You can find the show notes for today's episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. Get in touch with us via Instagram or Twitter at thefirsttimepod, or you can leave us a message on the website. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. We record this podcast virtually on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past and present, and we extend that to our First Nations guests and listeners. Sound production by Phoebe 80, who we can employ because of the wonderful support of our patrons via Patreon. Thank you so much for making this podcast possible.